Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Good morning. It's Sunday morning with Wendy Snyder, and This Week in Health is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. And I don't know, I think I may call this segment Wendy's Hypochondriac Corner because I'm a bit of a hypochondriac. Let's say hello to Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Delnor Hospital. Hi, Dr. Wheat. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you doing today?
I'm getting over a cold. Are cold and flu symptoms going around the city right now?
It does seem that way. We are still in flu season, even though people like to believe that we're done with it by the time we get to March, but absolutely still seeing lots of viruses making their way through.
I do want to mention, and I have mentioned this before on the radio, over Thanksgiving, I got the flu. I just put off getting my vaccine, which I will never do again. And I was at a birthday party at a retirement community. And I got the flu along with seven other people, and I gave it to my husband, not that I wanted to, but I did, and he has asthma, so he developed pneumonia and was in the hospital for 8 days. Very scary. He's doing great, but I'm telling you, I will never forget my flu shot ever again.
Yeah, it's really hard when we have to learn that way.
I know.
It's true. People think that the flu is not going to be so bad, but sometimes we just don't know who it'll be, but there can be complications that do put you in the hospital and make you pretty sick. It really is not, it's not a mild illness.
No, and listen, I know we all think, oh, I've had the flu before. I don't think so. I mean, I did when I was younger, but it's been like 30, 40 years since I've been that sick. So I do believe in getting your flu shot every year and the COVID shot. My question to you is, I don't need it probably for the rest of this season, or should I get a flu shot? This was November.
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, I might still consider it. And the reason that I might still consider it is usually in the first half of the year, we have flu A going around. And in the second half of the year, we tend to have, or in the second half of the season, I should say, we have flu B going around. And the flu shots that we get try to cover for both of those things. And people can get both. Just because you got flu A doesn't protect you from getting flu B. So you're still at risk. Fortunately, I haven't seen a whole lot of flu recently, but we can still see it all the way up to May.
Yeah. And I just want to mention, too, that I had measles growing up and I had chicken pox, not chicken pops. And I did not have the mumps. And I do remember years ago where there was a big mumps outbreak at Disney and in the NHL. A lot of hockey players got it. And now measles are all over the place. Is this because people stopped getting the vaccinations?
It really is. We have seen the highest rate of measles this year that we've seen since, I want to say it was 2000, when it was said that it was eradicated in the U.S. Last year, we saw a bunch of it in 2025, and 2026 is setting up to be more than what we saw last year. And most of the people that have gotten it were not immune, so they hadn't had the disease before, or they did not have either one or both of the vaccines. And so it really is looking at people who have made decisions to not get vaccinated that we are seeing really be impacted by this. And unfortunately, some people are too young to get the vaccine, or even if they do get the vaccine, it doesn't work as well for them, so they're being impacted by others not getting the vaccine.
And I don't mean to be an alarmist, but did I read something that polio is back in Europe?
You are not being an alarmist. Yes, we are seeing that. That is one of the things that many of us in healthcare are worried about, as we're watching people choose to vaccinate their children less. And so, yes, absolutely. It's something that we're watching and very worried about.
Yeah, my sister's going to Europe, and I read that, and I said, polio has been eradicated for years. It just is shocking to me.
Yes, and it can be devastating. And so I really do encourage people, if they have any concerns about vaccines, to talk to their healthcare team. We're happy to have those conversations with you and talk about what the true risks and benefits are, because I am absolutely worried about these diseases coming back.
And, you know, bottom line is you need a good relationship with your doctor. If you're a parent, you need a good relationship with your pediatrician. Mm-hmm. And so many times, my boys are in their mid-20s now, but when they were little mm-hmm. and an HPV vaccine had come up, mm-hmm. I just asked my pediatrician, I said, did you give it to your son? And she said, yes, I did. And I said, okay, sign him up. Is that how you're supposed
to
do it?
That, and you know, that's what I say to my patients. As a family doctor, I see adults and children. And so that is absolutely what I tell the families of children that I see. I say, I will treat you just like I did for my children. And I'll be honest, my daughter was chuckling when I mentioned this last week because she was sitting next to me. But my oldest actually got an extra measles vaccine because we chose to travel before she turned 4. And so there is a guideline that says if you're traveling out of the country or to a high prevalence area, to consider getting the second vaccine early. So we did do that for her. And both of my girls have gotten their HPV vaccines and got them younger than some people do, because I wanted to make sure that they were protected as early as possible. And if you get it early enough, then you need fewer doses. And so it's absolutely, talk to us. We will treat you just like we do our families.
And there was some misinformation that was out years ago, and I feel bad because Jenny McCarthy was kind of involved with it, where she thought the MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination had caused autism in her son. She was lied to, and she realized that after the fact. But I think, you know, there a lot of people still think about, oh, these vaccines are going to cause some issues along the way, and no real proof of that.
Absolutely. There, the studies that linked that vaccine and autism have been completely disproven. And there have been many more studies that have come out since then that have said that there is no relationship. It is just unfortunate that the time that we diagnose is around the same time. And usually families, if they really look back, are able to start pointing to signs that happened prior to the vaccine. And so, yes, this is absolutely something that comes up. And it's fair that people have reasons to sometimes not trust healthcare, but please, if you don't trust your physician or your healthcare team, I recommend that you find another one. We are absolutely there for you and want to have these conversations and want to make you feel safe with the choices that you're making and want to do the best to keep your families as healthy as possible.
That is said very well. Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Del Nor Hospital. We're going to take a break, and we're done talking vaccines. If you're not into them, that's, you know, it's your choice, but do talk to your doctor. We have some other topics we will discuss when we come back. And if you have any questions, 312-981-7200. You can call us. You can text us. We're here for you. 720 WGN. Good morning to you. It's Sunday morning. It's Wendy Snyder here, and we are talking to Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Del Nor Hospital. I don't know. I really may call this segment Wendy's Hypochondriac Corner, because I probably have a bunch of issues. I am a hypochondriac, and it happens to the best of us.
It sure does.
I know. And just let me tell you that the internet is not a place to go to instead of a doctor.
It is not.
It isn't. No. All right. Can we talk about like these GLP-1s? A lot of people are doing Ozempic and Mounjaro, and I'm not sure if insurance covers it. Someone had told me that if you have sleep apnea, your insurance covers it, which is crazy because I know thin people who have sleep apnea. So, first of all, are they safe? Do you have to stay on them forever? What are your thoughts on them? And for certain people who really have a lot of weight to use, I imagine they are good for them.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we first started seeing this class of medications when it came to diabetes. And we've had them around for a while, not necessarily the ones that people are talking about all of the time, but we've had this class of medications for a while, and we saw really good benefits in people who had diabetes. And then they started doing the studies on weight loss, and people have had amazing benefits also on weight loss, and it's sort of plus minus what your insurance is going to cover. I always tell my patients to call their insurance companies and see if there's medications that they will cover, because it is not consistent. But people are having really great success in really losing the food noise and being able to lose their weight. They're safe for many people, but there are some people who can't take them because of certain risks that they might have. And absolutely, we've seen impacts to things like sleep apnea. We've seen impact to things like heart health and liver disease. And so it just sort of seems that as we're studying more and more, that we are seeing benefits in general to overall metabolic health. I think many people do find that they need to stay on these medications once they're on them. It seems that when they come off of them, some of the weight starts to pick up and the health risks associated with that happens too. And so hopefully they can stay at a lower dose, but these are probably long-term medications for many people.
And I had been reading, you said a lower dose, I had reading about micro dosing GLP-1s might be more successful. Has there been studies on that?
I think that those are being studied right now.
Okay.
I think that some of the obesity specialists have differing opinions on that.
Yeah.
So I've seen people say yes, I've seen people say no, but I still think that's one of those things that we need some more data on to be totally consistent with.
This is not fair to throw at you, but I'm going to anyway. There are these new like mushroom teas. Rise is one of them, and it's supposed to give you natural energy. I always wonder about these supplements that are out there. Do you know anything about these?
So I've seen the articles as well. And my challenge with supplements is that they're not always, they're not overseen. So if you're having it in teas, if you're having it in vitamins, things like that, you never know how much is actually there. And so it's hard to say. Are there health benefits to it? Probably, but it's hard to say what the amount that you need and what the actual impact will be. There's definitely some conversations about healthy eating and certain foods that you should be having that can mimic some of the same responses as some medications. And so I'm always for that. If you can get your nutrients and the things that you need from foods, I think that's always a great first place. But we just need to have a little bit more information about what is consistently helpful.
Because I do know that, you know, there is a gut-brain connection, and probiotics are something that are really, they've been around for quite a while, but they're picking up steam for really helping just your body run smoother. And it is weird because they are not really regulated. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's some brands that sometimes I trust more than others because I've seen consistent benefits, but if they're not regulated, it's really hard to say. I also encourage folks to have foods that have probiotics. So like I will send people towards yogurts and other things so they can get it naturally as well to help with that gut health. It's something that I 100% recommend and believe in, but it's hard to find something that's consistently regulated.
And when you do add a supplement, I know a lot of us are lacking in vitamin D, but hopefully we have more mm-hmm. sunlight, so hopefully we'll be doing better. But any of these supplements, you really should check with your doctor or pharmacist if you're taking any medications, right?
That is absolutely true. There are definitely some medications that interact with different supplements, and you can have changes to the medication amounts in your body, whether it's either too much or too little. And so it's absolutely worth a conversation. The pharmacist is a great place to have this conversation, your physician as well, so that we can just make sure that there's not interactions.
So great to meet you. We will talk to you next week, Dr. Weed. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great week.
You as well. Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. This week in health, I like Wendy's Hypochondriac Corner better. We'll see.